Well, you may have seen and read a lot lately, either on social media or on your local news, about Indiana House Bill 1333. It's an agricultural development bill that was written and introduced by State Representative Kendall Culp, who represents the Rensselaer area in northwestern Indiana. That's District 16. And since there's been a lot of different things reported and said about the bill, we here at Hoosier Ag Today thought it would only make sense to hear personally from Representative Culp talking directly about his bill. Representative Culp, he joins us now, and the floor is yours. Let's start from the beginning. What exactly is Indiana House Bill 1333? Where did the idea for this bill come from? And where does the bill currently stand here as we chat on Friday, February 6th?
Well, thanks, CJ. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today about 1333. This bill, like many of my bills, come from constituents. When I hear concerns and communities and needs, I take all that in and then try to formulate those and do some bill ideas. This one kind of rolls different things together. I'm obviously always wanting to protect some of our very best farmland. I hear that all the time about land use issues in our community. I mean, House District 16 is such a rural agricultural district, and people are concerned when they lose farmland. So that was the focus of that. Obviously, if you keep prime farmland, you're going to promote food security. I also had a component in here which looked at trying to protect and keep our utility cost in line, as well as enhancing local economies in our local communities. So I put all those things together. There are four or five parts to this bill. Obviously, the land use part is getting the most attention and it needs the most attention. It needs the most work to be done on that. As this was coming together, again, a very shortened session. We had to have our bills in December. Of course, we were in session for those couple of weeks in December on redistricting. So it's really changed the dynamics of this. I was looking at kind of trying to find a new, unique way to protect our farmland. I've had bills each of the last two sessions to begin and establish a farmland protection program in Indiana. Unfortunately, neither one of those bills had advanced. There just doesn't seem like there's the appetite in the General Assembly to work towards protecting our farmland and keeping it in agriculture production for food production. So I tried to go a different way. At the same time, I looked at the possibility of building off of Senator Cook's last year, Senate Bill 425, which it established energy enterprise zones, which if you're an energy enterprise zone, basically you either have a fossil fuel plant or you have a coal mine. And I only have one of those in District 16. That happens to be in northeastern Jasper County, the Schaefer plant, the NIPSCO coal plant. And so what this one provision of the bill did, it said, well, you could allow battery storage to be put in an energy enterprise zone, which makes sense. If you're producing power, you want to store that power for when it's needed in the evening or other times of day. So that was one provision. Another provision, which remains in the bill, is when you have public hearings and local committees, whether planning commission or commissioner meetings, and you have people that are wanting to be heard, and some of these are activists that don't live in the area, maybe don't even live in the state, and they go from community to community and kind of raise havoc. And so we just simply said, well, I think it would be helpful for the person running the meeting, the chairperson running the meeting, to have their name and address written down. If they have a request, they want to speak, they sign up, they put their name, their address. If they notice that person's not from their county, they could ask them, well, do you own property in this county? Do you lease property? What's your relationship to this county? And then it's totally up to the chairman if they can decide. Do they want to have a time limit on speakers? Do they want to have a specific order where they want their local residents to be heard first and have the most time? So it just gives them that flexibility. They can do that today, but there's no there's really no guidelines in statute. And so really it just kind of formalizes the public comment process, which I think is important. The other part of the bill too, and this goes back to our land use task force that we had that I co-chaired with Senator Doriel back in 2023, that said we would like to steer development again away from farmland. And if you have any of those brownfield sites, maybe former, you know, gas stations or dry cleaners or places that maybe had some soil contamination, that the state would release you from that liability if you would purchase that brownfield site and develop your building there, whatever you were building, your business, and establish that there, that you would be incentivized to do that. So those parts are part of the bill that we don't hear much about. They remain in the bill. And that's where those kind of came from. Again, land use to save our farmland. The other part, as we were looking, was focusing on another way to protect the most acres. And in soil classifications, those soil classifications are established by the National Resource Conservation Service, NRCS, and they have come up with 8 soil classifications. They've been around for a long time. And statewide in Indiana, I've done some research on this, 84% of our ag land is in classes 1 through 4. So I thought, well, it makes sense to try to protect that. And so we're not doing anything with that. If you want to develop on that land, it remains the same process locally as we have. So while I was focused on the 84%, we were getting our bills done, getting ours drafted. And so it was the 16% that I think is in the most question. So the less productive land, a lot of this is timberland. It could be water. It could have steep slopes. It could just be rocky and not even buildable. We have 19 counties in Indiana that has no classification in 5, 6, 7, or 8. It's all 1 through 4, 19 counties that wouldn't even be impacted by this. So I will admit we got a little fast on this, and there was I overlooked the fact that it took away some local control. So once I discovered that, I introduced an amendment to change that, to take that and to make sure we reinstated, we had the local communities would weigh in on that, put those safeguards back in. Unfortunately, my bill got changed dramatically in House Utilities where it was introduced, because my bill did not have anything to do with data centers when it was introduced. The only provision was really an anti-data center provision, which stated that back in 2019, back then, the General Assembly apparently passed legislation that exempted Indiana data centers from paying state sales tax. So anytime they replaced all the servers and the hardware and the equipment inside, they didn't have to pay sales tax as an incentive to get them to locate here, apparently. I reversed that, and I said in my bill that they would now be subject to pay 7%, just like all other businesses are. So in committee, that was not well received by the committee, and so they reverted that out, and instead of the 7%, they said, well, how about if we charge them 1% and all of that money goes to the locals? If they're going to go to site one of those in their community, then they can site it there. The only place they were even eligible to be located in Indiana under my bill was on these energy enterprise zones. Again, I would have one place in my county, but I put stipulations on there that they would have to check 3 boxes. I hear a lot about concerns about their high energy use, so, and a lot of water usage. And so we addressed that. It said that they would have to create their own energy on the same site that the data center was located on, or any, it wasn't a data center, it could be any property, I'll restate that, that they would have to provide their own energy for that new development if they were a high energy user. So it would have to be located right next to a power plant where all the infrastructure was at. They could not compete with power on the grid, so ratepayers' bills would not be affected. Secondly, they would have to adopt water savings technology, so they were not using an exorbitant amount of water. And third, they would be required to have an economic development agreement with the local government, in most cases a county. So it would be advantageous financially if that community wanted to site one of those there. And they would be able to benefit from that. That language all came out of the bill as amended in the House Utilities. So unfortunately, we lost the focus of development away from farmland, and now the focus became more towards data centers and where they're going to go. So when you combine that together, I think people have lost the focus that this was about protecting farmland, not making sure farmland was used for development. And so as we look forward now to where this goes, I offered an amendment in 2 committees on this bill in Ways and Means, and I was going to offer it in second reading on the House floor when any member could make that amendment. It was drafted. It was filed. I was not allowed to to introduce either one of those amendments. And so my option then was to, if this bill advanced in this form, which I did not like the form, then we would have to work on this in the Senate. And so I went to the Senate sponsor, Senator Cook. He gave me assurances that that provision of loss of local control would go out of the bill completely, and he would not consider any bill with that provision in there of less local control. So that's where it's at currently. I've actually just asked him, I said, why don't we just eliminate 1333, just let that bill die. And if there's another provision that you like about the battery storage or about the streamline public hearing process, if you want to include those somewhere else, I think that would probably be the best thing to go. So he did make a statement yesterday that he guaranteed that permitted use language or the local control language, that was all coming out of the bill, so we won't deal with that. And that's the right thing to do, which is what I tried to do on the House side. So he is giving assurances. I don't know if he's going to move the bill forward or not. He at least made that assurance that would be taken care of. If we don't get anything, I'm going to continue each year to support the idea of protecting our prime farmland, keeping that in agriculture production to grow food and feed. I think that's what's important. We're certainly a very important agriculture state. And it just shows we need more agriculture support in the state house. We need more people that are sympathetic to agriculture and understand the needs that we have and the protection that we need. And so hopefully, if we don't get any farmland protection bills through this year, hopefully we'll be able to work on that in the future.
Representative Culp, you said that you weren't pleased with how the bill looked when it went to the House floor for a vote, but yet you were among 56 other representatives who voted yay for the bill. I'm just kind of curious why, and I you kind of touched upon it earlier, but why would you still vote yay on a bill if you didn't like the way the bill looked at the time that you were voting on it?
Sure. Well, there's times when you have your own bill, when you're the author, that you're in control of the bill, and there's other times then when you pass it off and the other chamber, someone else is in control of the bill. So again, I had assurances that it would be improved and those bad provisions would come out of it, because there were still good provisions in the bill, the ones that I stated earlier. And so you goes to the Senate, you have a chance to amend that in the Senate committee. You have, and that would be recommitted if it moves, it would be recommitted to appropriations. They'd have a chance to amend it there. That having a chance to amend it on the floor of second reading, then if it passes any bill, if it passes the Senate, then it comes back. If it's different than what it passed the House, which it definitely would be, it would come to conference committee, and I'm back in control of it again. At that time, I can kill the bill at any time. I can make changes. I can revert it back to the way I introduced it. As long as I can get agreement from the other legislators from each caucus, then the bill becomes back in a good position again. You could vote against it and make a statement. Some people did, obviously, but again, that doesn't improve what we need. What we need the bill. We need local control to be returned back to back to those local governmental units. And so I was committed. Once you start with the bill, if you're going to vote against your own bill, you just don't need to advance the bill. I mean, that's the thing. You always try to make the bill better once you get started. And at some point in time, you just have to say, okay, we're just going to stop this and try again next year. Senator Cook is very well respected in the Senate, and I believe that he will do his best to either advance it in a good position or make sure that it doesn't advance at all. And that's kind of was the encouragement that I gave to him yesterday.
And to your point, yes, State Senator Cook did release a statement on Thursday saying, quote, the permitted use language in House Bill 1333 will not be moving forward. But I do still want to address some criticism that the bill has received long before. And I think it has to go to the appearance of what the legislation looked like, what it was, what it ended up looking like up until this point. And I think the overall concern was that this bill could have provided a blueprint to remove guardrails and the checks and balances and take away a significant amount of local control from cities, counties, and local townships or local government entities with this bill. Sort of a slippery slope, if you will. Representative Culp, how would you respond to that criticism that this bill gave that appearance that the state was looking to just basically remove little by little more of that control from the local governments?
Well, and that's a very valid concern. And like I said, whenever that became apparent that that's what that did, even though we were talking about, you know, the 16%, I came from local government. I was a local commissioner. We've had lots of, you know, lots of public hearings, public input, public testimony, and we never wanted to support the statewide influence like that. We always liked it local. I always liked that local as well. That's why I introduced the amendment to make that change. It was disappointing to me that I was not allowed to amend my own bill. That's kind of unusual. And so that's why I think going forward, if the Senate, there's a very narrow path for this, and there's not a lot of room to, there's one thing you have to improve it is just to get rid of that part. I advocated just for the bill to be killed this year, for it to die. And if there's other parts of the bill, somebody wants to move somewhere else, I said, you know, you could do that. But I think we have to show that, I mean, locals have their voice, their role, and that's important. Not every community wants to accept new opportunities and new developments. Some of them want to stay like they are, and I certainly understand that, and I respect that, and that should be their choice. Again, once we decided, while I was focusing on the 84%, the focus probably should have been more on the 16%, and we certainly corrected that with the amendment we filed.
And I know that the criticism has included those who are opposed to data centers. In fact, the community of Shelbyville in Shelby County, I know that a large number of folks in that area are opposed to the building of a new data center in their backyard. But this could have gone beyond that. It could have been solar farms. It could have been windmill sites. It could have been that the state wants to build a huge penitentiary in someone's local area without that input. So you certainly understand the feedback that you and your team have received and other lawmakers that this bill could have created.
There's no doubt about it. The other thing you have to remember is there is not a lot of that class 4 through 8 land in Indiana, but specifically if you have to have a large tract for a large development, it would all have to be contiguous. And again, most of that in Indiana is woodland, wet soils, sloping soils, those types of things. That's why people want to take our prime farmland and develop that, because it goes on and on. You have big parcels of high quality soils. It's flat, it's level, it's drained. And that's why development is so much easier from a developer standpoint to take our best farmland out of production. I thought, that's what I've always heard, that folks want to protect that, the best land. That was the effort here. If that effort missed the mark, then obviously we're going to go away from that. We're not going to do that. But I think there are still areas that really, really respect agriculture and what that brings to their community.
Not to paraphrase what you just said, Representative Culp, but was this bill, did it just start off with good intentions and it just ended up being a bad bill overall, kind of once it left the House?
Well, it was before it left the House. It was when it left House Utilities Committee, which is the beginning of the process. It was heavily amended there, and that's when the intent of the bill changed. That was certainly not the bill that I filed, the bill that we have been acting on. I stated earlier what that intent was, what we were trying to protect and promote. And basically they tried to make it a data center bill. That I worked very hard to make sure it had nothing to do with data centers, except for the fact that we wanted them to start paying Indiana state sales tax. So Indiana could profit. If we were going to have those, we could profit from them as well.
So
if that all came out.
And I apologize. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I guess overall, if the bill, once it comes back to the House after it's been amended in the Senate and it's still not to your liking, you've said I will kill the bill if it does challenge that local authority that was put into the House version.
That's a commitment that I've certainly made. And I could tell you that I don't think we'll ever get that far because the Senate will not vote for, I don't think the Senate would probably vote for that as well. Again, we thought that we were going to be able to fix this through amendment. It didn't happen. The other provisions of the bill that were positive, I think Senator Cook might like to look at some of those, the good parts, but he understands this local loss of local control is a deal stopper, and it certainly is for me as well.
Representative Culp, what final message do you have, not just for your constituents, but those across the state who, once again, they may have heard about this bill and once again, believe there to be just the appearance of some work by the state lawmakers to take that control away from local governments? What's your final message to folks across the state who may still have that opinion?
Well, I appreciate everyone's input and coming out. It shows that certainly our constituents and our citizens in Indiana are engaged. We have a democratic process. It works. It's showing it's working. Their engagement certainly and advocacy makes a difference. But again, they can rest assured. I think what we've seen is, and what I've seen in this is we're trying to help one thing, and that's protect farmland. And then on the other hand, you saw that, well, that could mean a little loss of control. And I think what I've taken away from this is Hoosiers absolutely value local control from local units of government. And that's where that control needs to stay. And I would certainly agree with that. If that means we lose some farmland, then that means we lose some farmland. But local officials need to be making the decision of where these businesses and these developments are sited.
Once again, Indiana State Representative Kendall Culp, thank you so much for your time here today on Hoosier Ag Today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for talking with me.